Throughout the early childhood years, there are opportunities for every child's potential to blossom and for a lifelong love of learning to begin. Welcome to Lilio. Our solutions for center management, family engagement, teaching and learning, and professional development have impacted countless educators, children, and families. We stand as a symbol of quality and commitment to early childhood education, with the belief that early educators have the power to change children's lives and ultimately the world. Lilio, the building blocks for high-quality childcare. Learn more at www.lilio.com.
Hey everyone, it's David Duchovny. Do you ever feel like a failure? Trust me, I get it. Hell, I've spent my whole life almost feeling like a failure. It's appropriate, though, because on Fail Better, my new podcast with Lemonada Media, exploring the world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives, is the whole point. Each week, I'll chat with artists, athletes, actors, and experts about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, I hope we can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out on May 7th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Lemonada.
I'm Kiki Monique, and this is I'm Sorry, a podcast about apologies. And this week, I am getting a new phone, but for the first time, I have to turn my phone in. And if you know anything about me and my phone, I am very scared. I hope there is, I'm going to put it in the microwave. I just don't want anyone to know what's on it.
Oh, that makes sense.
I desperately want to run an operation where I get a hold of your phone for a couple hours and just snoopity doop doop doop.
And this is Mohamed El Sheikhi, and I am currently enjoying four seasons a day in New York City, and love it so much. Love not ever knowing what to wear and just always feeling uncomfortable. Perfect 10 out of 10, no notes, really.
And my name is Oha Lopez, and this week I figured out how to use my brother's sewing machine, and I tried to make myself a bathing suit top. It's not working. Apparently it's complicated, especially if you have giant gazongas. So that's what I call boobs, breasts, titties, big knocks, doorknobs.
I took in the context clues, yeah.
Bongo bongos.
I'm almost mesmerized by how many ways you find to describe that. What was that one time you called it chest mountains?
Chest mountains.
Yeah, incredible.
Just heads. You've got two giant heads on your chest. I mean, there's just so many ways. Anything round that comes in twos, you can. That's what you could call a boob.
Amazing.
So, I'm welcome to hear more. Whatever people have got out there, I'd love to hear. What you call your boobies. We are so excited to welcome Ophira Eisenberg. She is a Canadian-born stand-up comedian and writer. She is the host of NPR's Ask Me Another, and she is also a regular host and teller for The Moth. There's so much more that you've been up to, but I'm just so happy to talk to you about it all.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks so much. When you start with Canadian-born, I just feel
right.
I was meant to be on any show that involves apologies. And sorry, yep. Because that has
correct.
Been parroted back to me by every American. They're always like, oh, say sorry, because we say sorry, right? You don't say sorry. Sorry.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not quite fancy. It's not quite the English pronunciation of sorry, but it kind of a little bit. Just yeah. a tiny...
Yes. And there's an ongoing, I guess, I think it's a Canadian joke that how do you get a Canadian to apologize, step on their foot?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you've victimized yourself. Yeah, I love that. I love that.
You could probably apply that to women, too. I feel like someone steps on my foot immediately. I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. What am I doing?
But, when someone's going through something unhappy in their lives and I will say, I am so sorry. And they will say to me, it's not your fault. And I'm like, right. That's a very American thing to say. Okay, that's a very American thing
to absolutely.
Say.
Absolutely.
It's the same as like when you say like, I'm sorry, and the other person's like, no worries. Or like they say something that isn't quite like an acceptance of the apology, but they're like, that never caused me any issue in the first place. You're free to go.
Exactly. You're like, all right. Well, I guess I'll save my empathy for worthier people. Okay.
Oh, that's really funny.
Yeah. I mean, do you guys come from big apologizing like families? Like, what is your my question goes to the team, like, what were apologies like when you guys were growing up, kind of thing?
Oh, they did not exist. I'll tell you that much. I literally never heard my dad or mom apologize for anything. Even like when they know they're wrong, they like find another way of saying it. They would never say I'm sorry. Those words are like never come out. They're just like they're sandwiched into like some other like phrases and stuff, but there's never like an admission of guilt. Like I feel like if it was like, you know, if it was like a court case or something, we always like reach a settlement. No one like is admits guilt.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, I'm gonna do this for you. It does not mean that I think I've done anything wrong. I just want you to stop nagging me about this.
Oh,
and that's
really
it.
Funny.
Yeah.
What about you guys?
I don't think, I mean, nothing stands out either way about, you know, my parents, you know, apologizing to each other. I mean, but I always knew immediately when I did something wrong, the first thing to do was say, I'm sorry. So they obviously taught me to do that, but it's like not like I remember it being a big deal.
Yeah. I think I was a chronic apologizer. I was just like, I just was constantly apologizing for things that were and weren't my fault. And then I can't remember. I think that's maybe a kid thing too, where like, because you're the center of the universe, it's for good and bad. Like you think that everything bad that happens is somehow some hidden part of something you did. But I definitely think, I think my parents were like yours, Mo. They were just like, we're fucking surviving out here, so stop asking me to do any better than I'm doing. This is it. This is what you get, kid.
Yeah, I don't remember anyone ever asking me my opinion, input, what I liked in my family as a childhood, ever.
Yeah,
I was just, and so the ultimate, you know, I guess similar in some sense, ultimate authority figure kind of relationship with my parents, where, you know, they would not apologize, or if they did, they would be like, I am sorry that you did that. You know, yeah. Like, whoa. But I still grew, and I don't know if this is just the being a female thing. I don't know. You know what? I'm so glad you said that about like kids feel like they are somehow responsible for bad things. That just made me feel less alone. Thank you. I was like, me, you, okay, not just me. So there was a sense of apologizing for everything, perhaps my existence. I think that was in there somewhere. Yeah. But I'm the youngest of six as well. So I was also, you know, just really teased a lot by my older brothers and sisters. So I was always wanting them to apologize. You know, I was always telling on them, which made me the least likable sibling.
Yeah, I don't like that whole snitches get stitches thing in sibling stuff. I'm like, God damn it, I'm being bullied. Somebody help me.
Yeah.
But the tattletale. No one likes the tattletale.
Nobody likes the tattletale.
I know.
You know what Amir did to me? I mean, that was every second thing out of my mouth. That's my brother's name, Amir. Yeah.
They want us to solve the majority of our own problems so that they don't have to deal with them. So I get that. I mean, I guess 70s, 80s, and 90s kids, we were just like raw, no therapy for our parents. We were just raw dogging it out there in the world. Like, just, they didn't even know why they wanted to have kids. They just had them to have them. And then we had to deal with the consequences of that.
Yeah. It was like, put that key around your neck, go straight home. You are 8 years old. Do not turn on that stove, but cook yourself something somehow, feed yourself, sit in that basement until I get home. And it's like, okay, cool. I'm totally cool with that. Which is why the pandemic, I think, didn't bother me. I'm so used to being alone in a basement by myself watching TV. Like, this is my life.
I'm sorry. My childhood prepared me for this moment. So I'm ready. Oh, my God. And I know, I mean, like, I guess we're also from different areas of the U.S. And I was wondering, like, because in Chicago, I've noticed that people are relatively polite. And also, I grew up, I was in the South for a long time before, too. So there's a lot of, like, politeness and sort of like, you know, there's a little bit of bless your heartness. But generally, I feel like people apologize a lot when I'm out in the street. But like, I was thinking about New York in general, and it doesn't strike me as a place where people apologize often, or like, it almost feels like people are just like, have like a single-mindedness about going where they're going. And
yeah,
they
there's
feel,
no time.
Right. They feel like tourism just for existing should be an apology to New Yorkers. Like, is that, does that feel accurate?
I'm going to say yes. I just feel like I don't think it's a mean thing. When I moved here, I thought it was mean. I thought I was so used to, mm-hmm. I grew up in Canada. I thought these people are so mean and nasty. And then I hooked into the efficientness. Like if you left your house and had to apologize for every person that bumped into you, for every interaction that didn't go in the most civil, beautiful way, all the words in the world will be used up in that one day of apologizing.
Absolutely. Yeah, no one has the time. Yeah. It's so funny, like coming to visit New York and then living in New York, because when you visit, like, even like, you're mesmerized by everything. Like, even like the people on the subway, you're just like, oh my God, like someone's playing music and they're like people dancing and Showtime and all of that shit. And now, like, I've lived here for a while, and like anyone tries to do anything on the subway but just ride it in peace, I'm like, I am going to kill myself right now if you do not stop.
See, I think I actually appreciated and miss that sort of the way apologies went in New York, because it wasn't like a normal apology. Like, I've been in LA for like a year, and I feel like people here are way more rude than New Yorkers. Like, they they don't acknowledge you. Whereas in New York, it's like if I walk through a door and maybe I say thank you and the person didn't hear me and they're like, you're welcome. And then I start screaming, I said thank you. But then like, we're not mad at each other. We're just yelling at each other. So we both hear each other and then we go about our way. I like respond to that so much more than just like no acknowledgement or just passive acknowledgement.
Yeah, 100%.
I see that.
I have found recently, you know, riding the subway and things like that, that I have bumped into someone and, you know, I'm wearing a mask, but I will audibly say to them, sorry about that. And they will turn to me unsure what to do. And then they just sort of give me a chin up kind of nod. Yeah. And I like it. I feel like it disarms them for a second.
Right. That's gorgeous. Those little micro stranger interactions I live for.
Yeah, the opposite of microaggression. What's that? Micro apology. It's a micro apology.
Yeah. It's just a quick moment.
So speaking of apologies, you have a kid.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
How old is
he? Right.
He's 6.
Okay. Do you ever apologize to him for anything, or like, how do you
constantly.
Like approach that?
Constantly. And sometimes I think that that's bad. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing. Sometimes I'm like, that's bad parenting. That's good parenting. It's good for him to see that we both apologize. But I apologize for raising my voice. I apologize for all of my bad tendencies. Or I also apologize to him when something doesn't work out for him the way he wanted it. I mean, I feel terrible. Of course, I want everything to work out for him, an impossibility. But he'll tell me something like someone at school called him stupid. And I will say, you know, I'm so sorry that happened to you. And then I'll tell him that, of course, that, you know, he's not stupid and that we're not supposed to do name calling. And I'm sorry, that's, you know, I go deep into apologies. Although he left his coat at school, and then my husband and I both got kind of angry at him about that. We're like, don't leave. You can't lose your stuff. You can't lose your stuff. And then my husband kind of yelled at him and then said, I am so sorry for yelling at you. It's just, I used to lose all of my stuff when I was a kid, and I don't want you to become me because it is a terrible way to live. And my son said, wait, so you're getting mad at me because of who you were in the past?
Wow.
And I was like, that is all of parenting.
Yeah.
All of parenting is me like feeling shame about who I was in the past and seeing it on you. So,
well, you
like,
even wrote that letter to your friends where you were apologizing to your friends who had had kids and then you had them, you know, later than they did. And you were like, I'm so sorry for all of the ways I acted and treated when I was,
oh yeah,
you know, child free and acting flippantly. Like you couldn't get dressed and couldn't come out and couldn't just get a baby. I mean, I love that letter you wrote to them.
Yeah, because I thought, just work harder. That's always been my, you know, oh, really? You can't
all right,
do
Kim
that?
Kardashian.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, what's wrong with you?
I grew up in a little sort of like town of Venezuela, and so we didn't have anybody. There was no teen pregnancies, nobody that really got pregnant. And then I moved to the United States and I had my very best friend. We were 20 and they were 22 and they got pregnant like accidentally. And so I felt like I had to really step my pussy up to like understand this human who was my best friend who now had a child. Mm. And looking back at it, it was a... we kind of all raise this little community kid at this point because, you know, we're all just hanging out at 2021. But I read the letter too and I was like, oh my God, I did so many of these things.
I mean, that's the dream because I feel like because I did it late, I ended up with a community of friends that decided that they were not going to have kids. Mm. And then I did it late. And so those are still my friends. And I think they are sometimes the devil because they'll do the like, come on, just bring them. Just bring them. It's a party. Just bring them. We'll all have fun. And they don't realize that it's not fun to bring a 5 or 6 year old to an adult party. Like you get there and the theme of the party is like, I don't know, broken glass and bourbon. Like it's already bad. How do I, you know, no one's like, let's help. Like, no, they just.
Can I take your place? That sounds like a party I want to go to.
I don't know why it's broken glass and bourbon. And it's good. That probably exists.
Throughout the early childhood years, there are opportunities for every child's potential to blossom, for curiosity to spark, and for a lifelong love of learning to begin. Welcome to Lilio. We develop innovative tools that revolutionize the connection between daycare centers and families and help empower educators, enabling them to nurture young minds and build strong bonds. Through our solutions for center management, family engagement, and teaching and learning, plus professional development through Lilio Academy, where educators can earn continuing education credits at their own pace, we've impacted countless educators, children, and families. We stand as a symbol of quality and commitment to early childhood education. With the belief that early childhood educators have the power to change children's lives and ultimately the world. Join us in nurturing the future. Welcome to Lilio, the building blocks for high quality childcare. Learn more at www.lilio.com.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. After season one aired, I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. And of course, my 90-year-old mom, Judy. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me Season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
Did any of you know people at any stage that joined some sort of like, it's not Scientology, but you know, sort of a moving on with your life group that was mildly pyramid scheme where part of it was calling people and apologizing?
Oh, no.
Yeah. I once received a letter from someone that was clearly paying into a group to move on.
Interesting.
Yeah. I wonder if somebody thought that I was, because there have been times where I have felt guilty about something and written an email to somebody I hadn't reached out to in a long time just because I needed to get it off my chest. So they probably thought I was, but I was literally just like, I need to let go of this because karma is a bitch.
That's good. That's like amazing. That's, people are paying for that and you just do it on your own. I would brag about that more often.
I feel I've had people who were going through a 12-step program reach out to me. It's two that I can think of that have reached out to me, but they were specifically going through a 12-step program. So I don't know if that was, it's a little bit of a cult, but maybe sometimes people need a cult to stop doing drugs and alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
Well, speaking of cults, we should talk about the man with the cult, Elon Musk.
Yes.
The worst cult to ever exist. The Tesla bros, the Elon bros,
So what are y'all's, I guess just to start off, what are y'all's like general impressions of Elon? Like, he's been in the news a lot in the past few years. If you had to describe him to somebody who has no idea who Elon Musk is, how would you do it?
I mean, I really don't think about him often, so much to the point where they did a skit on SNL and they were imitating his voice. And I had to go look at a video because I was like, does he speak like that? Because I actually have no idea. And so like when I think about him, all I think about is a white guy who has way too much money and time on his hands and is secretly just trying to like cultivate Mars. Like he does not want to live on Earth anymore. He wants to have hundreds of children, move them all, and create a civilization that like poor people can't be a part of. That's what I think about him.
I think he sucks just to start from there, and I really hate that man so much. And I think it's also like my biggest issue with him is the people who are like so obsessed with him. And it's just like, you know, people like view him as like very smart and like just like he made every penny on like with his brain and all of that, and they kind of like worship him that way. But to me, all I see is like insecure man who really just wants to be liked so bad, because how are you the richest man in the world and you're spending most of your time on social media posting the worst memes that you did not even make, stealing from other people, and just wants to be liked so bad? Like, it's honestly pathetic in a way where this is all you want, and you can tell like this is someone who just, you know, like always like wanted that, and now with his money and everything and having like these people, he's just like everything he does feels like a stunt.
Yeah. Like a stunt. Yeah, that's a really interesting way of putting it.
I think when I saw Don't Look Up and Mark Rylance plays basically the Elon Musk character and is just so obsessed, you know, obviously has some brains, is like working at something, but is obsessed, self-obsessed, and has zero care for anyone, any fellow human in any regard. I was like, that is a beautiful, one of the greatest actors portraying this person with just utter precision and beauty. Because I do not think, I think I can't even comment on what it is that him as an inventor or as a visionary. All I see is a power thirsty individual who is completely corrupted and obsessed with their own voice. I mean, just have lunch in space and leave us alone. That's what I say. Just have lunch in space and leave us alone. Go for it.
It is a strange, like, acknowledgement that these billionaires are like, I would rather start an entire new planet than try to help the one that I already live on. And it seems like they're all doing it. Like, it's the metaverse, it's the Amazon, it's the Branson, it's the tech. Like, I don't understand why this feeling of like interplanetary like communion or this strange, I don't understand the pull to that. It seems bizarre. And I think it's once you have too much money and nothing excites you anymore and you can't get a boner for, I don't know, the stock market anymore, then you're like, I need to time and space travel.
Well, it's also like arrested development. It's like they're 6-year-old boys, literally.
100%. Yeah. 100%. And also, like, you have, like, these people are, like, psychopaths. Like, they do not care about helping people. They do not want to help people unless it brings them, like, some kind of, like, admiration or, like, people, like, would. And they have that. They have these lunatics who will just, who do not have as much money as they are, not even close, who want to be one day just like these guys, like Elon Musk, right, and Jeff Bezos and all of these people. So everything they do is epic to them. Mm-hmm. You know, like every tweet, every word they say is just like, it's like sent by God. And they're like, this is so amazing. I want to be this man. Even though, like, if you look at most of the stuff that they want to do logically, absolutely makes no sense.
Yeah. I want a little bit of that. I want that. I don't need all of it. I just want to be a delusional, hot, fat woman walking through the streets of America, believing that everything that I say is a diamond gold mine that everybody should listen to.
I agree with you. Early on in the pandemic, and I do joke about this, there was an actress who posted on Instagram that she let her hair go gray. She stopped dyeing her hair. And she wrote that she let her hair go gray in support of the first responders. And I was just like, oh my God, is it possible to do less? Like, what? What? Like, but the ego behind that it's like, can you imagine if I was like, I'm letting my fingernails grow for, you know, famine.
Yeah.
We're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
It's not a thing.
You mean you're going to stop doing the most minimal thing you were already doing?
Like, I'm letting my hair grow out.
Right.
Yeah. For the troops.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, it's meaningless shit, but it's also like you have a lot of these people, like, have no, you don't know what the public is like or what they want. They have, like, they do not know how just, like, normal people live. So they think, right, they really believe that this is enough. This is what people want from them.
And people do kind of. That's the problem.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. And I think about it sometimes, you know, like, obviously, like, you know, I do stand-up comedy, and I obviously, the whole art form is about being liked. This is all you want. You want people to like you and enjoy what you're doing, and you cannot really, what you're doing cannot exist without people, you know, responding to what you're doing. But at the same time, I keep thinking about it, I'm just like, I really never want to have, like, be a cult leader, or, like, have people just, like, blindly believe and like everything I do. Because I feel like if that happens, then if, you know, the moment you, like, fall from grace is going to be the hardest, because you just, I feel like that happens to a lot of people where they really believe that they're just, like, you know, they believe they're it, they're the thing, and then when they're abandoned, they're just like, holy shit, there's no one that actually likes me. It's insane.
You know, there's, like, every Easter, a picture goes around of Jared Leto and, like, an old woman looking up at it and, you know, thinking that she's praying to Jesus. This Easter, Jared Leto posted it on his own feed, and I was like, dude, you're not getting the joke, and that's weird. And what? Like, I love Jordan Catalano. I've been in love with Jared Leto since, you know, I was a wee thing, but I'm kind of loving that he's just getting joked so much lately by, like, carried by
Mahanan.
Gen Z. I mean, it's been Mahanan. But, like, I was just like, he's not in on the joke. They like this idea of being a god to people. And, yeah, and billionaires, they're the worst. There's no good billionaire. I don't care who you're. There's no such thing as a good billionaire. They're all terrible people underneath it all. Because you can't want that much power and it be from a good place.
You can't even, I don't think you can amass $1 million and be from a good place. Like, I just think that.
Well, I'm going to try to, I'm going to say that's possible.
Should we try?
Yeah.
Yeah. And report back?
Yes.
And the thing about, like, you know, amassing that, like, amount and, like, not wanting to help people is insane to me. Because I feel like any time in my life I have, you know, made an amount of money that was more than I've ever made before, I'm always, like, thinking about, like, first of all, I don't know what the fuck am I going to do with this. This is, like, a lot. And I'm just like your brain immediately goes, like, what can I donate some of it to something? Because I'm just, it feels right. And I'm just like, it's so insane to me that the concept of helping other people does not bring them joy.
Yeah, or they also just don't think, well, I'll never miss this. Like, what if I just gave the bank account number to someone I, if I can't come up with a good idea, I'll just, I know someone that will have a good idea.
Exactly. Like, imagine like finding like even one person, I'm like, I'll pay your rent for a year or so. Like, does that not make you happy? It's so insane to me.
I like literally hadn't paid my phone bill and I was driving down the street and saw this homeless man who had two puppies and only had $10 on it and gave it to him because I was like, I need you to feed your puppies. Who cares if my phone gets cut off, right? You yeah, need to feed the puppies. Out. And I would think that I would carry that into being a billionaire, but that's probably why I won't be a billionaire, because in order to be a billionaire, you can't care about the puppies need to die, right?
That's right. There's going to be a couple puppies sacrificed for your billions. Right.
Exactly, exactly. And also, like, for you to be a billionaire, you have to also think that the people who are poor, who are people who, you know, not even poor, like, do not are not at that level of wealth, is because they don't work hard enough, they're not as smart as you, they deserve to be poor.
Yeah, I didn't actually know the concept of a trust fund kid till I moved to New York, not to say there aren't rich people in Canada. I just didn't know them. And I remember going to someone's really nice apartment, you know, as a 25-year-old, and thinking, if I work really hard, like one day, that I was like, oh, no.
Exactly. No. And it's so insane to me because they're like, because I feel like once you start believing that the people who are in such bad conditions deserve it, it's because of their own doing.
Yeah.
That is when you like start like to lose all empathy and you're like, I'm not giving them my money because if I give them money, they're going to lose it anyway. And
yeah,
they're not like, oh, maybe the system is like against them and they literally work all day and like they have three jobs or so and they still cannot afford it because, you know, and I can't remember where I read this, but like, you know, like being poor is expensive. It's very expensive to be poor.
Yeah.
There's so much more that you need and so much like places you'll find yourself in where you have to spend more money than you have. And so, some people like Elon Musk don't think that, don't think about that.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think especially like, I mean, just to get into like the bigger concept of, you know, what capitalism means to us and why it feels like it's brimming in such a fucked up way right now that we all have so many opinions on billionaires is the idea that they're benefiting from an kind of an unjust economic system where it's like they're not actually making that money. They're sort of taking it from the people that they are legally allowed to take it from in some ways. And it feels like policy failure. And so people get angrier and angrier and angrier.
Absolutely.
And I wonder if those cushy government subsidies, if, you know, like all those healthcare costs that they're supposed to be covering are still remaining high. Like, all that like inequity I feel is brewing and I can feel it. And I wonder if things are going to change in the next 30 or 40 years. Like we've seen crazy things happen and revolutions happen. So I'm wondering if this is like catalyzing it, you know, that they're also so visible.
That sounds hopeful. I like the idea.
No, I know. Am I hopeful? My girlfriend Rachel is like, get a guillotine, just put it on their doorsteps and see if they have a conscience.
Do you ever get hit with a cringy memory of your 13-year-old self out of nowhere and suddenly you're panic sweating and laughing at the same time? Don't worry. We all get that. It's because being an adolescent is one of the most visceral shared experiences we have as people. And we want to talk about it. Join me, Penn Badgley, and my two friends, Nava and Sophie, on Podcrushed as we interview celebrity guests about the joys and horrors of being a teenager and how those moments made them who they are today. New episodes of Podcrushed are out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm June Diane Raphael.
And I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And each week, we are sitting down to talk all about life's twists, turns, and absurdities on The Deep Dive.
From exploring the depths of TikTok, which is our only news source, to navigating the complexities of grief and loss, we are just two best friends behind a mic processing life together.
This podcast is all about finding the silver linings in the madness. So get ready for unfiltered conversations about motherhood, careers, pop culture, and everything in between. Here at The Deep Dive, we're all about community. We believe in the power of sharing experiences and the strength that comes from supporting one another. And we would love to have you with us. So be sure to join us every Wednesday on The Deep Dive from Lemonada Media, wherever you get your podcasts.
Is Warren Buffett, does he own Wall Street Journal? And then is it Bezos that owns Washington Post? Yeah. And it's like they each have to have their own toys. And whether it's like a yacht or it's a news outlet or it's a big thing. And to me, like when I see Elon saying that he wants to purchase Twitter, I'm like, that's going to be his toy that he gets to say that he owns in some way or another. So in my mind, it's like, because I read a couple of articles, but do you feel like it's a stunt? Do you feel like it's a strategy? Like, what is he doing?
I wish there was just transparent. Like, there's no way we can say like, oh, by the way, the king would like an open forum, you know? So, you know.
The techno king.
The techno king would like, we all want democracy, says the king. So if he was transparent, like, let's just say Elon Musk said, I want to own Twitter because I want to control what goes on Twitter. Like, you could be outraged about that, but I'd be like, oh, this is interesting. Okay. But to do the, like, I'm going to own, you know, this thing that was meant to be a, you know, virtual town square has gone off the rails. So I'm going to own it to restore its inherent value. Like, that's when you're just like, okay, now this is the worst version of Twitter. You're actually doing what we're fighting against in this forum.
Exactly. And also, like, the whole thing about, like, you know, every time I hear a billionaire or like a multimillionaire, like even like Joe Rogan or like any of these podcast guys or now Elon Musk and Bezos talk about free speech.
Yeah.
I always want to like, what's your idea of free speech? What does that mean to you? Is it a white dude saying the N-word? Is that free speech? Because this is what you think free speech is. It's also like, to them, free speech is always annoying. It's always like being able to say dark and offensive stuff, even though they have no idea what that means to them. And people are so sensitive, even though they are the ones who are like extremely sensitive and cannot take any criticism or any of that. So Elon Musk saying like we want to bring like freedom of speech to Twitter. I mean, there is no one stopping you from saying anything you want on Twitter for the most part. Most of the people who get suspended and whatnot, you know, is safety and like safety issues. Like, I'm sorry that you cannot tell someone that you want to kill them or that you want to post someone's like address online. Does Twitter have problems? Absolutely, it has a lot of problems. For example, it does not regulate hate speech well, and it just like let it go. Like, they are like, if you post a music video and use like something copyrighted, they will come at you immediately. If someone is a Nazi and posts your address online, they will just take their time working through that. So to hear these guys just talk about, like, you know, freedom of speech and whatnot. And it's so funny to me because people who believe that they fight for freedom of speech the most and will not stop talking about it usually have nothing of importance to say. Never, never anything interesting to say. So, yeah.
It is, it's unfortunate. I mean, I think also that just even the idea of someone being like free speech that has been co-opted, much like the American flag, to very far right wing groups who do not want freedom of speech. They want freedom of hate.
Absolutely.
So, and I think you're right, too, when it's like Elon Musk wants freedom of speech. No. The fact that the music licensing or what have you will shut you down within a second of posting anything that has a copyright law versus a Nazi sentiment shows you that the whole thing is a capitalistic machine anyways. So let's not pretend this is a forum of free thought.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. It's not great when someone who has so much money than you can ever imagine just wakes up one day and just decides, hey, I want to purchase this big website that the whole world uses. It's not, to me, this is not perfect. It's not a great system. But what do I know?
But then again, maybe it's time to watch Twitter die. I mean, that will just kill it.
I am for that. Like, if Elon Musk.
I know you are, Mo.
If Elon Musk. This is the only way I would accept him buying the whole company. If he is willing to ruin it, completely destroy it. I want my life back.
This is truly highlighting your love-hate relationship with Twitter in a profound way. And I think the idea that he's like, or the Washington Post did that thing where it's like peak billionaire stuff. Like, this truly is a delusional, insane thing. And I love that if it does die, that we're all sort of like, yeah, we're fine with that. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Welcome.
Can we contribute to that? Can we, yes. Can we help you?
Because we know, like, there's something about Twitter already that already is a poison pill. Like, there's just something about it that isn't quite working. And the fact that he feels like to make it more open, to make it to, you know, open up the he talked a little bit about opening up the algorithm so that people can change it and have opinions on it. Like, some of it I'm like, I get, but it just already feels like a kind of fucked up company in so many ways. And I guess my question out to you is, when we were kind of going through all of this, I realized too, you heard about the whole the jet thing where it's like this teenager on Twitter has an account that is essentially just tracking Elon's jet. And then I guess Elon didn't like it. And then immediately it's like 2 or 3 days later, he starts buying up shares. Like, that feels peak billionaire to me too.
Yeah. Someone hurt his feelings.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope that it's all based in this pettiness, because then I can actually get involved in this storyline.
Yes.
In a fun way, because I just like live for petty. I live for mess. Like, because, you know, if he really did, he wants this, what, freshman in college, he tried to offer him, what, $5,000 to stop posting, you know, his jet, which I guess he denies or whatever. But he feels like, I want to kick off whoever I want, which, by the way, is like the opposite of what you say you want. But I hope it's this petty, because what I feel like in all of this, remember that skit? I think it was an SNL skit with Dave Chappelle and Chris Rock when Trump, it was during the Trump election, and they were just sitting there with their white friends in the back and just kind of like, yeah, you know, he's going to win. And that was me. That was me in Brooklyn, like, yeah, Trump's going to win. They're like, what are you talking about? You're crazy. And I'm like, and even if he does, like, I don't know if it matters, like, this white guy or that white guy. That's how I feel about this Twitter thing. I'm like, okay, if Elon owns it or Elon doesn't own it, I don't know. And it's all white guys who are just doing annoying things, and I don't know if I care. But if he's doing it because he doesn't want his jet tracked, I'll pay attention. Because what a little baby.
I want the name changed to Elon Musk's Twitter. Like, I want him to go hard on needing that to be called, so we know exactly what we're getting into. We're not getting into an open forum.
Right.
We're in a conversation all the time with Elon Musk.
Can you imagine paying $43 billion or so because you want to stop people from being mean to you on Twitter? That's fucking insane to me. Like, oh my God. I'm just like, man, it's so funny to watch, because it's just like this. It's that.
Yeah.
It's the jet, and also people just dunking on him nonstop because he's a fucking psycho.
Yeah.
It's so that he can do that. And also, I think he really wants to get in on this joke of being like the first African American to own a social media platform, because like the amount of retweets of like his Elon bros, I'm like, I can't, which is another reason, don't ever call me an African American. If you do not refer to me as black, I will not talk to you, because exactly this.
It's so, yeah, that thing, I'm just like, I hate it so much. The whole like African American thing where they like try to describe Elon Musk as that. First of all, I mean, I don't know if you dabble in reading, but he's from South Africa, and even in South Africa, I would say that he is still European.
Well, even in his wiki profile, it says his father is a white South African. Why you got to add that white in? Why can't you just say South African? Because that's how much you want to be separated
exactly.
from Africa.
Exactly. Yeah. Where did these white people come from in Africa anyway? And also, it's so stupid, because like everyone knows, like when you say African American, everyone knows it's not a location thing. It's like what a person looks like. Like their
right.
skin color. Like, I was born and raised in North Africa. If I ever become an American, it would never call myself African. It does not make any sense, because African American is equals black. This is what it means.
Yeah.
But these people just love this shit. They just love taking something and being like, "Yeah, let's be annoying about it." I'm just like, "Have at it. You're so stupid, so annoying."
That's why we should, that's why, see, someone who is very good at silencing voices wants yeah. to own public forums. Mm-hmm. That's
exactly.
the whole thing.
And it's so funny offering that kid who had the jet thing $5,000. $5,000? Like, this is how much you think people who are like poor people think is a lot of money. $5,000.
But to Elon's credit, I will say, you know, our government did give us $1,200 for 2 years worth of pandemic coverage. So in his mind, he thought he was really doing something.
100%. 100%. Now it's time for my favorite segment, which we do every week. It's called Sorry Not Sorry, where we either apologize to someone for the week for something that we did, it can be anything, or, which I like to do the most, is demand an apology from a person, a group, or the weather. It does not really matter. And as always, I'm going to start with Oha.
Thank you. I would like to demand an apology this week. I went to a psychic. It was a fun late night situation with a friend. And I'm going to tell you something right now. That psychic lied to me the whole time. I sort of played along with it to see what she was going to say. But at one point or another, she told me that my mom was trying to speak to me from the dead. My mom is fully alive. She's just a full, real, alive person. And that my mom wanted to talk to me about some things that I had done as a child that she still had a problem with. She was like, what? I'm in the session going like, what are you talking about? I think maybe she was an insane person.
To be fair, though, knowing moms, knowing my mom specifically,
yes.
She would try to reach out to me from every like platform ever, even the dead. So,
yeah, even while living, my mom
exactly
just channeled through this psychic to tell me that I needed to call her as an emergency. And then when I called her, she said, you should call your dad. It's his 5th anniversary from his retirement and tell him you love him. Those are the kind of emergencies my mom calls me for.
You ever have your mom just text you in the middle of the night, just like your name, and you think something bad happened? Like my mom would do that, where she's like, haunted, haunted, haunted.
And it sounds like your mom is already haunting you. She is.
And there's a big time difference between us, like over 8 hours, and she does not care about that. She would send me a text to me at like 4 a.m. and then I'm like, mom, like it's 4 a.m. here, and just like, well, it's 12 p.m. here, so I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. She would get banned even if she was my mom, because people who don't just tell me exactly up front what the text is, they like just do like
exactly.
a question mark and then wait yeah. for my response before they tell. It drives me. I will throw my phone like out the window when I see that. I cannot take it.
Exactly. At 100%. Well, Kiki, what's happening with you this week?
You know, I want an apology from this guy who I don't like people who don't understand elevator etiquette. Elevator etiquette is very, very simple. And I went to this doctor's office. I hadn't been there before, and you know, it was like, you know, you had to go down into the parking garage, and I had to go down like, you know, it was like P1, P2, B, A, B, C or whatever. And so I got to like B level, but it all looks the same, right? And then I had to take the elevator up to the doctor. Coming back to the car, I hit the B level and I'm just sitting there looking at my phone, and then the door opens and then I'm like, oh, and it all looks the same. So I get out, and then this guy like, you know, he rushes in. So I like get out. And I realized I wasn't at B. I was at P1, and he had done the thing where he had hit both buttons. So he was trying to go up, but he had hit both buttons. So instead of getting in and saying, are you going up or down, which is proper etiquette, especially if you've hit both buttons, I get out and then the door closes. And now I have to wait for him to go all the way up and then wait for it to come all the way down. And I was just like, you know, I just don't like people who don't know elevator etiquette, and you owe me an apology, because now I had to like, then I had to get back on for just like one more. I couldn't like take stairs down. I had to get back on this elevator, wait like 5 minutes, for like one little floor down. Just rude. Yeah.
You essentially encountered a psychopath in the wild. and he showed you that he was a psychopath through his actions. And now you know.
The reason it probably took so long to get in, he probably pushed every button when he got in there. Just like, yeah, weirdo. Why are you pushing all the buttons?
Mm-hmm. Pushing all your buttons. That's what he did.
Exactly. Clearly.
100%. Yeah. God. Well, I'll go. Yeah. And I mean, I don't have anything, you know, big. It's, I'm demanding an apology from my girlfriend, Rosie, because she, was, she listens to this podcast. So this will get to her eventually. I mean,
this is how you talk. I mean, through your podcast.
Yeah. I send her like, you know, messages on this podcast and she asked me what's wrong. I'm just like, listen to the next episode. You will hear it. Yeah. I'm like, I'm not going to tell it to your face. But this week she was in Michigan visiting a friend for the weekends, and we have two cats who are extremely needy. They can be insane, and having to spend the weekend with them, honestly, looking at my arms right now is just like the battle scars. Because like they, you know, they're used to us both being at this apartment, especially like after like we got them right before the lockdown, so this is all they know. Us being there all the time just for their needs. And it was just me this weekend, and they just went insane. They just wanted my attention 24/7. Yeah. And they'd come to my like the bed at 7 a.m. and they just like climb on it, and they're just like, come on, feed me, wake up. So I literally couldn't get anything done during the day because of them. So what I'm saying is, you know, like I would think that she should never travel or leave.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Again,
fair. That is how all husbands feel about when their wives leave. They're like, yeah. You forced me to take care of my own children, and that's not cool.
Exactly. I'm not here to do I also travel and leave her with the cats alone? Yeah, maybe I do that almost every weekend, but it happened to me now, and I think that is unfair.
Oh, sorry.
I'm just impressed your cats didn't jump up until 7 a.m. Mine are definitely 5 a.m. Like, it's jumping on my face. It's time to eat. So if your cats are willing to wait till 7 a.m., like, I'll switch with you.
Ophira, none of us have children, so we complain about what we can, okay?
I'll just say this. I used to have a dog.
Yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Get that.
And anytime anyone says to me, do you have a dog? And I say, I used to have a dog. That's a good way for people just to get wide-eyed and sink back. Okay, sorry. That's a good way to get an apology.
So, Ophira, what's happening with you this week? Do you need an apology of someone? Do you apologize to someone? What's happening?
You know what? I'm going to switch gears because I'm so sick of apologizing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I want many things to apologize to me, but I'm going to go kind of big because you know what? I want the healthcare system and the pandemic to apologize to me at the same time, because I just found out that New York City is no longer giving free COVID tests.
What?
If you go to give a COVID test, it costs, because New York City, a place where rates are rising a bit and is obviously very dense and has many, many markers that during any kind of infectious disease makes it just a vulnerable place, has decided that it is no longer a major threat. So you have to pay for your COVID test. But that's the insurance company. The insurance company is clearly putting pressure on New York City to decide to do this. So you have to go. You can still get it for free, but you have to go to these little tents that are littered around and ask if they are run by the city or the state, because the state, for whatever millisecond, is going to still offer them for free. So good luck, everybody. It's all going to be
That's
fun.
That's ridiculous for so many reasons. Because one, I just saw an alert pop up on my phone today of like a famous DJ, Kay Slay, that passed away from COVID. So it's like, okay, clearly this is still a thing in New York. Like, one. And B, I am so sick of insurance companies, period. Like, I don't know if you heard that story this weekend. It was a terrible story of a guy who like ran down this girl like over and over. Like they had she was trying to take a picture of his license plate, and so he ran her down. He was the psycho. But the worst part of the story, which surprisingly isn't her getting run over, it's that she goes to the hospital. Her insurance company says, because it was an intentional act, we do not cover this. I'm like, I'm sorry, intentional act. Someone tried to murder me. This is exactly what my insurance should cover if someone tries to murder me. So I'm sure they'll change course once it goes viral. But I'm like, drop the name of that insurance company because I want them to go viral. I want people to know who this insurance company is so that we can all stop paying their premiums.
This is a call to action, okay? This is a call to action. Bring them down, baby.
Yes.
It's always good to leave with a little bit of like, and I don't know, but and.
And I don't know what I'm going to do when I'm very angry. And I will take in this pent-up frustration and turn it into some kind of long-term disease. Thank you very much.
You're going to see a very aggressive tweet.
Ophira, thank you so much for joining us. This was a blast.
Thank you for having me.
This was so great. And where can people find you? I'd love to. I don't follow you on Twitter, but I will. I'm popping up my phone right now.
Please do. I'm on all of the social media at Ophira E, because if you can believe it, at Ophira was gone. However, I am at Ophira on Venmo. So who won, Ophira?
Oh, yeah.
You did.
Who won?
And if I may, I have a new comedy album coming out in a week.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so exciting.
It's called Plant-Based Jokes, you know. So
we'll put our links in and make sure everybody can click on that. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Sorry is a Lemonada Media original. The show is produced by Alex McCohen. Supervising producer is Chrissy Pease. Our executive producers are Stephanie Whittles-Wax and Jessica Cordova Kramer. Our mix is by Kat Yor, and theme music was composed by Xander Singh. If you like this show, please rate and review. And please don't cancel us. You can find out more about our show at Lemonada Media on all social platforms or follow us on Instagram at @I'mSorry_podcast. We'll be back next week. And until then, be nice, play fair, and always say I'm sorry. Thanks for listening.
People love to pretend that there are simple formulas for living your best life now. Eat this and you won't get sick. Manifest it and everything will work out. But there are some things you can choose and some things you can't. And it's okay that life isn't always getting better. I'm Kate Bowler, and on Everything Happens, I speak with kind, smart, funny people about life as it really is. Beautiful, terrible, and everything in between. Let's be human together. Everything Happens is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Feeling decision fatigue about what to make for dinner? We get it. I'm Jane Black.
And I'm Liz Dunn. We're veteran food journalists, and as parents ourselves, we know how hard it can be to feed your family.
That's why we created Pressure Cooker, a podcast that offers practical strategies for navigating the marketing madness and cultural expectations around mealtime.
Each week, we'll check in with the experts. From social media diet trends to baby-led weaning and AI meal planning, we have all your food-related questions covered.
Listen to Pressure Cooker wherever you get your podcasts.